And welcome back, everybody. We are talking with Kyle Hunt about his current work over at Renegade Broadcasting and, of course, how he moved and transitioned from some of the things we talked about last time pertaining to some of the synchromistic stuff over to some of the more geopolitical, currently, you know, driven agendas that we see in the world, considering, you know, everything from multiculturalism to mass immigration to demonization of the European, etc. A lot of interesting and important subjects I think we've gone through so far when it comes to, well, history and just analyzing things from a different perspective so that you can get a chance of arming yourself with the oppositional side to the propaganda that we've been getting and asking yourself, you know, what is really happening? What is going on in the world? And why is this being run in the certain direction that it is? I've been always surprised by people who are very willing to accept history for what it is. They even take the Hollywood version of events because it somehow favors their current stance or whatever, but then they claim that they're alternative or for truth or whatever. But we'll get into some of that a little bit later as well. But there's much more to discuss about entertainment and what's happening there. But let's just talk about the AIPAC a little bit more. I mean, foreign policy, not only of America, but Europe in itself, NATO, and all these countries are banding together to creating the chaos that we see in the world. There's basically driving up the reasoning to a certain extent for massive migration waves, for why there is problems in other parts of the world, and how I've always seen that they're basically doing everything they can to create chaos and disorder and mayhem in every country in the world to create the kind of conditions that we see now. How do you see this agenda, Kyle, and how do you see that the war industry and everything else play into the agenda we've talked about so far?
Well, basically, the military of the Western world has been used by, it seems, elite Jews such as Henry Kissinger, who once stated that military men are just dumb, stupid animals to be used as pawns in foreign policy. They're being used to go around the world, create havoc, rake in massive profits for these different NGOs and different contractors, and to institute a policy that is favorable to Israel. I think some of this has backfired, you know, for them. There's been a lot of blowback, but for the most part, Israel hasn't had to fight in any of these conflicts whatsoever. It's been the goyim, as we are called, and just as kind of multicultural soldiers of the United States are being used as proxies for Jewish interests to go into the Middle East and overthrow governments and all sorts of other things. Now it's supporting different terrorist groups such as in Syria and also before in Libya. But just as that's being done with our forces, well, the immigrants and the different non-whites who are being radicalized against the European people, they're also being used as proxies, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we're being played off against each other. It's the goy versus goy conflict that we're seeing play out. And I don't want to see World War III happen. I think that's what could be in the cards. You know, we've got this really big powder keg that I mean, there's so much conflict going on around it that at any time this massive powder keg could just explode. I really hope it doesn't. But, you know, if we do end up, if any of these countries does actually in the Western world does have something of a nationalist type of uprising or decides that they no longer want dual citizens running their country. And when I say dual citizens, really the only dual citizens we have in power here in America are Israeli dual citizens. Well, then there's always the Samson option, which is the threat by Israel to nuke Europe and other key centers of the world if we ever turn against them. So they are a rogue nation of terrorists who have nuclear weapons that they're willing to use against us, that they've openly stated that they would use against us. And, you know, we're all worried about Iran getting the nuclear weapon, but we've got a country that was not ever part of any pact, any kind of non-proliferation agreement or anything like that. They just decided to go and develop, they say, something over 300 nuclear weapons. And they are the real threat to world security. America and the rest of the European countries, we wouldn't really have all too many enemies in the world if we didn't have such a good friend in Israel. At least that's the way I see it.
Yeah.
And just so people know out there, you know, who might not necessarily get this, the Jewish issue so much, they might be thinking what I'm saying is just all part of white supremacist. Now, this, you know, this is a label that I've gotten from all these different magazines, very, very anti-white publications, such as, you know, Salon, The Village Voice. They've all come out and called me a white supremacist. I think Raw Story did, too. I got a lot of press this past year, and all of them are saying I'm a white supremacist. I'll tell you what, I don't think I've really said really anything that could be termed supremacism. However, I could point you to books upon books, specifically the Talmud and actually the Torah, the Old Testament, that is just full of Jewish supremacism. I could show you quote after quote from Jews over the past century, stating very clearly that they are Jewish supremacists. But we rarely ever hear that term, Jewish supremacist, as compared to white supremacist, which is, you know, is being used to label anybody who takes a pro-white position.
Right, right. Exactly. Let me ask you that a little bit more about that, because I've heard that too, kind of thrown around quite a bit. And it seems to me that there's a huge misunderstanding that if you are concerned with, you know, the preservation of your culture and the very fact that you're interested or want to perpetuate the interests of you and your own, then that has been equated with somehow that you want to, you know, kill and murder and maim everyone else, you know. But there's nothing like that within there. Supremacy implies that you have a stance where you see yourself above everyone else all the time. And in many cases, I don't see this either. But isn't this more of the narrative, right? It's about actually defaming the character and actually going after, you know, not only you, but other people as well, and calling them names for the fact of actually trying to discredit them, as opposed to actually just listening to what they say and hear if it makes any sense, right?
Or to have an honest debate. They don't want an honest debate. They're just going to use slander against us. And, you know, white supremacist. How is somebody a white supremacist if they want to live with other white people? You can't be lording over other races if you're living with just white people. If you have the situation like they have in Orania, where they're doing all this is in South Africa, where it's basically a whites-only little city down there, where they're doing all of the work. How can you call that white supremacism?
Right.
You can't, because they're not enslaving any other race. They just want to be with their own. And we afford this right to every other people on the planet. You don't call Chinese supremacists for not wanting Africa to flood into their country. You know, you don't call African supremacists for wanting to have control of their lands in Africa, you know. Yeah. But as soon as a white person says, you know what, this multiculturalism thing isn't really for me. Oh, white supremacist. You want to just lord over everybody else. You hate equality and all the rest. And it's such a sham. It really is. Because think about this too. They tell us that if you're opposed to affirmative action, you just hate equality.
Right.
Affirmative action is the absolute opposite of equality.
Yeah.
Because everybody else is being given a hand up, and white people are being put at the end of the line for any kind of academic position, whether it's as a student or a professor, being put at the back of the line in terms of employment. We have government agencies hiring illegal aliens now over white people. Rahm Emanuel, sure. The dual citizen in Chicago, the mayor of Chicago, they had to change the rules so that he could become mayor of Chicago after leaving the Obama administration. Yeah, talk about Jewish supremacism. They're hiring illegal aliens now. They're bringing them into the military. So basically all these jobs that the white Americans used to have are now going to anybody but white Americans. It doesn't even matter if they're Americans. And we're told that this is equality. No, if we actually had equality, then white people would not be so poor as they are right now. We're given this image that white people are just living, you know, high on the hog, just incredibly rich. But if you go to a lot of different places in America, you know, you go to the Appalachians, the Appalachian Mountains, you go to Middle America, you go honestly anywhere in America, you will see lots of poor white people. You'll see homeless poor white people, starving people, people who haven't had jobs for years. And, you know, this isn't a system of white supremacy that we have. And this is what they're trying to tell us at these white privilege conferences, is that, yeah, oh, we're being run by a system of white supremacy. Well, if that was the case, if we really were living in a system of white supremacy, then wouldn't white supremacists be able to afford a little bit better than a trailer or a small house? Wouldn't these white supremacists be able to speak on the television? Wouldn't these white supremacists not lose their jobs for speaking out? No, we're obviously not living under a system of white supremacy, and we are living under a system of Jewish supremacy. And you look at who founded this white privilege conference, who's running it. It's Miss Abby Ferber, who herself is Jewish. And all this is doing is radicalizing white people and non-whites alike against the quickly disappearing white people in America.
Yeah, yeah. Who was it? Peggy McIntosh or McIntosh or whatever, however you pronounce that. One of the feminists who actually started the whole white privilege term, I believe, the invisible knapsack and everything else that you could take out of that. I mean, if you look at the arguments made there, it's just, I mean, it's unbelievably childish and ridiculous.
Yeah, if we were really living under a system of white supremacists, we wouldn't have affirmative action, now would we?
Right.
And so, again,
clarify that to people, it's you have people that are being denied opportunity and job because of their race. That's what affirmative action is.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's discrimination against people based solely on the color of their skin.
Yeah.
If you're white, you need not apply. And basically, this is very interesting to me that we have people who will question those of us who bring up pro-white positions. They'll say, well, what is white anyway? Right after they list all of the evils that white people have wrought on the world, then they'll say, well, what is the white race anyway? It doesn't even exist. It's a social construct.
Right.
Yeah. And so you have this, this hypocrisy, or people contradicting themselves. And, I'll tell you what white is. It's the people who aren't, who are being actively discriminated against because of state enforced racism through affirmative action and diversity quotas.
Yeah.
And this really is in essence, genocide, because this is taking away earning power. And when people don't have as much money, when people are forced to live in dangerous neighborhoods, they are not going to have as many children as they used to have. And as it stands right now, white Americans, their deaths have outnumbered their births.
Yeah, I think I read that somewhere as well. Another statistic coming out of that. Can you tell us a little about what is happening in America right now with the illegal immigrants basically flooding in over into California and Texas and Arizona and New Mexico? And I mean, this has been ongoing now for quite a while. The immigration, the ICE agents are basically releasing people. I heard stories about, or read stories, I should say, about some of the newspapers that are advertising down in Central America specifically, like how you can have children that they're called dreamers. If you go over the border and have your child in America, you basically get, you get free or for you get citizenship right away, you and your child, correct?
This is basically if you're a child, an illegal alien who comes to the country as a child, then you're now given citizenship. This has no constitutional basis. And so what has happened is that basically the Obama administration has given the green light to all of these young people that they should go ahead and endanger themselves, go on this very harsh trek where they're being raped by the different people who are bringing them across the border, being exploited. Some of them are dying. They're bringing with them infectious diseases. The administration has actually supported this, has said, yes, if you come alone, especially, you'll be given given all sorts of benefits. You'll be shipped to a different, they're shipping these illegal immigrants. Some of them, not just, young little girls who are defenseless. Some of these are people are young gang members with gang tattoos on them.
Right.
They're shipping them to different parts of the country and letting them go. So they cross the border, and then American agents will apprehend them and then put them on a Greyhound bus with diseases and all, and ship them off to another part of the country where then that state or county is expected to deal with them, to house them, to feed them, to clothe them.
Yeah.
And this is absolutely insane. If you were actually looking out for the interest of your country, you would never have a policy such as this.
No, exactly. I mean, think about it too, because America is talking now for a long time, specifically when Obama is in place, about how important it is to, you know, fight poverty and inequality and all these things. But what they don't realize is America is actually importing poverty when a lot of these people are coming in. How is this going to aid and help the situation in this turn? I mean, even think about how much America has been giving in foreign aid to other countries. This is something that basically, if it gets bad enough in America, even that engine in itself is going to stop. This is not beneficial to anybody, isn't this? Shouldn't there be, in other words, a system in place where these people could create the kind of life in whatever country they are in? Isn't that the solution to this problem, instead of spreading this out across the globe in the way that they're doing it now?
Of course, there's no way that we're going to be able to actually handle all of these new immigrants. They're not people who are going to become productive members of society that they want us to believe that they are. This is not going to work out well for anyone, and especially the minority groups within the United States already. The American blacks, some of them seem to be behind this because they're part of the whole Democratic Party and mindset, and they're supporting this, you know, because they think that somehow, if the white supremacist state is taken down, that'll be better for everyone. And so they see that the Mexicans are allies in this. That's absolutely erroneous for them to think that way. And some of them get it, especially as areas that were historically black, like Compton, now it's actually Mexican. Compton, California, mm-hmm. In LA, now it's all Mexican. So there's a huge amount of conflict between the blacks and the Mexicans who are coming in, and other Central Americans. And as I mentioned, a lot of these people that are coming over the border are basically coming over for gang-related reasons. They're shipping drugs. They are very dangerous, and it's not going to turn out well. There's no way this is a good thing for America, and that's the way they're trying to sell it. And now you've got Republicans who are also getting on the bandwagon for this. Republicans pushing for amnesty.
Yeah.
And in fact, this goes back some time. It was Reagan who initially gave amnesty to quite a few people who were in the country illegally. The plan that's now being basically put in place it comes from John McCain, who was a Republican, a so-called Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And so
neocon, distinction there, of course. Yeah. But.
Right. Well, you've got both sides of the aisle now. I said before that they agree on one thing, that they agree they've got to support Israel. Well, they agree on another thing. They agree that America is a nation of diverse immigrants, and that we've just got to welcome everyone. Come one, come all. And if we actually take this policy and continue with it, well, where will it end? Do we just have to ship in the entire third world?
Right.
To bring them up out of poverty?
Yeah.
No, that's completely unsustainable. And as I said, the people who are already in this country, they're not going to be benefiting from this. We have a huge, huge problem with unemployment in America.
Yeah.
Whether it's white people unemployed or black people or other people who are American citizens, they're unemployed and they can't find jobs. And their labor is now being undercut even more by people who are coming here illegally working for basically slave wages, and then shipping all of that money back to their home country.
Right.
And so it's hurting the American economy. It's killing the employment for American people. Most of the jobs that were created over the past decade have gone to immigrants.
Right.
You know, even if you look out at Silicon Valley, what's happening there? You've still got the tech sector that's doing very well. Well, they're bringing in all of these immigrants on H-1B visas when there are plenty of American people who could be doing these jobs.
Yeah.
But they're just looking to basically get the cheapest labor possible. They want to bring us all down to basically the status of the Chinese workers.
It's a wage dump. That's what it is. And that's where you have the tie-in where the huge, you know, mega corporations comes into the picture. They do not have any kind of national you know, ideology whatsoever, and they're transnational, they're above all that stuff, they couldn't care less. You know, they'd go to any part of the world just to drive down their wages, you know, and that's the kind of people we have, you know, running a lot of these companies now.
Well, Mark Zuckerberg has this forward.us, FWD.us, where he's pushing incredibly hard to make sure that there's amnesty pass for everyone, that we just embrace all of the immigrants. And there are others as well in the corporate sector who are pushing really hard for this. And the reason, of course, is because it means cheaper labor. It means, better slaves, not necessarily better in terms of more productive, but better in that you can hire a lot more for less.
Right.
And this is the real supremacism. This is real supremacism because they are looking to lord over these people at the, you know, at the lowest rate possible. And this goes back to what I've been saying the whole time about Jewish supremacism instead of white supremacism running this country, running the world. And they openly talk about it, Heinrich. There was the...
Let me ask you this. Sorry to cut you off there. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about that. We have, for example, you've heard it before. I've read it to my listeners before. We've analyzed the clip, etc. But it's such a good example that I have to bring it up again and again. And it has to do with Barbara Spector, Paideia, organization out of Sweden that is taxpayer funded. It's an organization of Jewish studies in Europe. Barbara Spector herself is Jewish, and she has argued, she did an interview with the Israeli Broadcasting Company. I think the important thing to remember here as well is that she was not talking with mainstream media. She was talking with an internal organization that was specifically, I think it probably, this movie even ended up by accident online, I believe, to a certain extent, and they didn't really mean for this to leak out in the way it did. But she mentioned, and it was like, when I heard it, I was like floored. I was like, what is she... First of all, how can she make this assumption? But second of all, the admission as well that she and all the Jews, she said, are going to be hated and resented, and we're going to see a rise in anti-Semitism in the world and specifically in Europe because we are going to be behind making Europe multicultural. And I was like, first of all, has she had a meeting with all the Jews in the world where they're now got together and said we're going to work for this? That's my first question. My second question is, why is it her task to do this to Europe and to Sweden specifically? And thirdly, of course, why are not more people talking about this? If it's true that this has created a schism that we heard from the mainstream media for such a long time that, oh my God, there's so many Jewish people in Malmö specifically, the largest dense immigrant population in Sweden that's to the south of Sweden. A lot of the Jewish people there have actually been driven off from the city pretty much because they say that the Muslim population is causing so much trouble for them that they don't dare to be left in the region and area anymore. Is there not a contradiction within all of this reasoning here? And why is it in their interests to make Sweden and Europe multicultural? How do you piece this together, Kyle?
Well, I honestly think that the reason that they've been going about, you know, making white nations multicultural is so that they can better blend into those nations more, that they can basically take out, also it's a process of taking out their enemies. And they view white Europeans to be their enemies because they know history, whereas we don't really know so much about it. They know that Jews have been ejected from white European nations over 100 times. Throughout history.
Oh, much more than that. I remember from, sorry to interrupt again, but from, I think we published a story as well from Wired magazine, was a study from the 1100s up to the 1800s, I believe. And there was, ejections from over 1,000 different regions, I believe, over the course of these many years. So are you saying that this is it's a vengeance tactic or something like that? Is that what's going on here?
I think it's part of it. I think that they really view the white Europeans as their only threat to world dominance. And they have used white Europeans for many years now, taking their institutions, their inventions, and turning them against us, such as the television is one great example. And now I think they've come to the point where they think that they can just destroy white countries, mix them out of existence, and then they'll be able to lord over the brown races of the planet. They will then be
Talk about being racist, by the way.
The Most High. Well, yeah. Well, let's talk about being racist. You have the Sephardic leader in Israel, Rabbi Ovadia Yosef. He stated, and this was published in an Israeli newspaper, Goyim, which means non-Jews, literally cattle, Goyim were born only to serve us. Without that, they have no place in the world. Only to serve the people of Israel. Why are Gentiles needed? They will work. They will plow. They will reap. We will sit like an effendi, which means master, and eat. So that just goes to show their mindset. And this guy was a beloved figure. Many people attended his funeral. Thousands and thousands when he died recently. It was Rabbi Ovadia Yosef. And as I said, you should have quote after quote of Jews talking about Jewish supremacism openly.
Now, do you think that this something that harkens back to the biblical times? I mean, we've talked about this quite extensively on the program with a lot of guests now, and trying to even show, some of the conflicts between the Roman Catholic Church and Judaism. We've seen the later mergence almost of the two and kind of cooperation in some instances. Now, this is something that has deep roots. And so how far back do you draw this? And I mean, have you looked into this historically at all, Kyle, and what the reasoning behind all of this is?
Yes, it does seem to go back a long, long time. You know, you could point to the beginning of the diaspora and the destruction of the temple by the Romans as one key defining time period, because during this diaspora, you then had the Jews splitting up and going in all directions. And even though this was supposed to basically destroy their power, it actually spread them out in such a way that they were able to infiltrate into many different societies. Some of them went north into Europe from the Holy Land, and these became the Ashkenazi. And the ones who went southward and then across Africa became the Sephardic Jews. And what has happened recently is that basically they've come back together. They've reestablished their homeland. And I do think that they're trying now to rebuild the temple.
Right.
And, and that's something big that they're really trying to accomplish. They've been trying to consolidate their power for some time. But yes, this does go back a long, long way. And it's really hard to say just when it began. You know, did it begin with Abraham? Did it begin with Jacob, who became, Israel, and all of his sons, forming the different tribes? Did it begin with Adam and all the rest? You can go back and analyze these texts, but
Do you think it's a religious virus, or is it an ethnic driven, I don't know what to call it, but a genetically driven agenda, or what do you think the basis is in it? Ideology?
That's an interesting question, because they always go back and forth on this one as well. When it suits them, Judaism is a religion, but when when that doesn't suit them, it's a race. So it's really confusing for us to try to understand whether or not this is really racial in essence or religious. Mm-hmm. I tend to think that it's more racial than religious, especially when you consider the policies of Israel today. They do not want the black Jews coming into their country. They'll just kick them right out. I heard you mention this recently on one of your programs, that they'll actually take some of the immigrants that come into Israel from Africa or the Middle East, and then ship them up to Sweden.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's
and
right.
Say, yeah,
they here. Offered $3,500 to each individual that were willing to go up to Sweden, and so they're dumping them in Sweden for some reason. And why are we accepting them? Who is accepting them? I mean, that's yet for me to look into. But that's extraordinary. I mean, can you imagine if Sweden did that? What the international outrage? Descent upon us,
We'll send all of our refugees to Israel. That would cause a huge outrage. But they're able to basically have a whole policy that says do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
That's the policy that they've put forth. And you have such hypocrisy from leaders in the United States, like Rand Paul, who's supposed to be a Tea Party leader and who's supposed to be sticking up for American people. And he condemned this Cliven Bundy recently for being racist. Originally, he had supported Cliven Bundy against the federal tyranny, but then Cliven Bundy made some comments about Negroes. And, you know, this was not politically correct. So Rand Paul had to, he came out and said, oh, no, I completely, I denounce this. While at the same time, he goes over to Israel, puts on a yarmulke, and goes to the Wailing Wall. And we know how racist, by their own definitions, Israel is. Mm-hmm. In fact, Donald Tokowitz, or as he goes by Donald Sterling, the owner of the Clippers, who was caught up in that racist rant that was illegally recorded.
Right.
He mentioned, this wasn't aired on the TMZ version, but he mentioned that in Israel, blacks are treated like dogs. And he's correct in stating that. So we have our politicians in America denouncing racism and then going over to Israel, which by their own definitions is the most racist country on the planet.
Yeah, it's just extraordinary. I mean, if whites in the West are such evil racists, I guess that's why no other people from other parts of the world want to come there and live in those countries then, right?
Yeah. Well, they're all saying, let's go be oppressed in Europe.
Yeah.
Let's go be oppressed by those evil racists. Yeah. Well, the fact of the matter is that whenever there's a global catastrophe, whenever some people face hardship, whenever there are refugees, who are the first people to go help them or to invite them to stay in their lands for some time? It's white Europeans. We're the most generous, caring people that are willing to spend billions and billions to help out everybody but our own, it seems. I think this is this is what I call pathological altruism.
Yes.
But if it was actually applied naturally, if it wasn't if we didn't have all of these alien forces basically influencing us, then I actually think it could be a very good thing.
Isn't that what it's about? I mean, in that regard, we've come to a certain perspective or a certain level, I guess, of our own achievement that we've managed to arise to that point where we actually can extend a helping hand to others. But what I've always said is that there's kind of this suicidal tendency that's going on within Europe and the West now, which is actually kind of shutting down that engine that used to be a leading role model for the rest of the world. I mean, why is it that all these other countries around the world are would they want to try to achieve that those same that prosperous way of life and the kind of system that we've had in the West and welfare and everything else? I know that there's some people who they blame. I mean, I don't buy this argument, but they're trying to blame that, oh my God, the only reason they got rich is because they raped and pillaged and plundered everyone else. But we had Ricardo Duchesne on the show that actually has written a really good book about this, The Deconstruct those types of arguments, and really shows that it's actually because of our prior achievement that we've managed to actually reach out and get to the rest of the world in that capacity. And there's actually a lot of good things that have come in. Again, it's not so black and white. It's not like a man with a whip that's standing over everyone else. The colonial times actually brought a lot of good things as well. You know, there's some infrastructure in some part of the world that still holds, you know, the railroads that the British built or the governmental buildings in, some other countries around the world. I mean, it's not so black and white, right? So what is happening with that engine now? Do you think that that's being consciously shut down, or trying to attempt to clench that the fire that existed within, you know, the European spirit? Or what do you think this is about, really?
Yeah, I think it's about completely demoralizing and taking away the power of the white European people. And it's done. It's such a multi-pronged attack. You mentioned basically a suicidal tendency within our people. That's a fair assessment, but I do still contend that it's genocidal because there's a plan that's been put in place, orchestrated to destroy us. And because of this, people get suicidal thoughts in their heads. And for example, one of the things that basically puts these thoughts in the heads, it's music and NOFX. NOFX is this kind of punk band that was around for a while. A few Jewish guys and a Mexican. And one of their songs was called Kill All the White Man. And a couple of lyrics here. No, I do not like the white man up in me. He raped my people as he raped my country. Everything I love and cherish, he tried to take away. We will be rid of him soon come the day. Oh, yeah. Kill all the white man. Now, imagine, no, this is considered, free expression. This is artistic. This is just kind of a revolutionary type of, expression from this band. Now, imagine if you were to do a song titled Kill All the Jewish Man.
Right.
Kill All the Black Man. Mm-hmm. Kill All the Mexican Man. You'd probably be in jail for inciting racial hatred. You'd be probably in jail for inciting genocide, to be honest. But that's what they do. That's what they have been doing, inciting genocide against white people. That's why Jamie Foxx was on Saturday Night Live, Lorne Michaels, a program there, another Jewish person, of course, saying, I kill all the white people in the movie. How great is that? And then you just hear people clapping and laughing. Mm. Yeah, that's great. Oh, killing white people is great. Course, this is a complete double standard. What's funny, I mentioned the Village Voice, and they came out with this hit piece against me after doing the White Man March. Actually, it was right before the first event, the day before. And the woman who wrote the piece, the online photo of her, she's wearing a NoFX t-shirt. So basically, she's condemning Mita as the worst person ever for standing up for white people. But killing all the white men, that's awesome.
That's noble.
That's great. Yeah. That's noble. Yeah, that's exactly. They want to make the destruction of European people seem not only inevitable, but also noble. They put an expiration date on us. In every single European country, for the most part, or white country, or formerly white country, there's a time frame for when white people will become the minority. In America, right now, non-white births outnumber white births. So young white people are the minority in America now. Will they ever get minority status? Doubtful. Mm-hmm. Any kind of protection or any kind of leg up? No.
Right.
But you look at Sweden. I'm sure there's a date that they've put forward when, it will be a minority white society.
Yeah, I'd say 3-4, maybe 5 generations from now, if the current trends continue. And that has to do with a combination, of course, of continuing to bring in immigrants, but also the Muslim population generally. I guess they have 4 to 7 children, something like that, maybe generally. And then, of course, you have in some cases, some couples don't even have any children, but in some cases, 1, maybe 2, very rarely 3, I'd say. So couple the statistics and I'll put all that together, I'd say in 4 or 5 generations, that might be it. And we've even had published articles, videos actually, on the website that detail how some TV personalities down in Turkey are sitting and talking openly about how we'll actually be able to take over Europe, not by, the sword, but by birth, basically. They, mm-hmm. They're laughing at us, haha, they don't have any children, and then we'll be able to take it over and build the greatest thing ever. We can just hand over Europe to Allah, And I think it's, again, very naive of people who don't realize that within the religious ideology there is a conquest kind of factor. There's a prize there. There's a ancient animosity even against between the Arab world and Europe, for example. So this is very real. There's a lot of people talking about this, but unfortunately, mm-hmm. a lot of people are not seeing that agenda. They're not seeing through that. They think it's somehow, if you think like that, you're wicked and evil and a racist and everything else. But it's just like, at some point, you have to face reality and you have to realize that there are other people in the world who have different agendas than you do. They might not think like you do. They might not argue like you do. And they have a completely set of different ideologies,
White people are the global minority. Some estimates put us at 8% worldwide. So we're the global minority, yet we're not allowed one homeland on the planet.
Yeah.
Of course, we don't have any countries that are allowed to be considered white countries anymore. But we don't even have we're not even allowed to have white towns anymore, at least here in America.
Right.
And it's just happened so quickly. In 1965, right before the immigration reform was passed, which was really spearheaded by Jewish interest and championed by people like Ted Kennedy, the USA was about 90% white. Now, estimates will put us somewhere above 60%, even though those are very questionable. And we're aging very quickly. And the births are, of course, way below a replacement level. So, if you don't see what's happening there and that we're being completely dispossessed and replaced, then I can't help you, because right. it should be right in your face that this is happening. And this is the problem, is that most people have become so indoctrinated that they actually think this is a good thing. They applaud this. You know, they'll see statistics about when blonde people will no longer exist on the planet. And they think, oh, that's great. All those evil blondes and those stuck up blondes and those dumb blondes, they'll be gone. And, you know, the world will be a much better place, and we'll all be coffee colored and one humanity. And
it's kind of a double standard there, because I thought that this was the protection of minorities and, preserve diversity. But of course, that's another, agenda on top of this as well, that they use one word. But then it turns out what they really want is a kind of a monoculture, a global, just a complete homogenized kind of goo, really. There's no distinctions, no differences. Right. I mean, I love the differences. You know, I love that capability of seeing different cultures and heritages, different people and everything. And I think it's horrible to see that this is now, they're attempting to kind of go away with that. But I want to ask you another question. What would you say to someone who says, well, you know, about the statistics you brought up there in terms of us being the minority and maybe even, you know, gone in a certain time period? Let's say they just, well, so what? You know, I don't care about that, or mm-hmm. race doesn't matter, or I don't care about people. It's all those things have just led to problems and issues in the past. What would you say to a person like that?
Well, that they're being completely naive and idiotic, because race is very, very important to almost everybody but white people. And you've got the mestizo supremacist group within the United States known as La Raza, which gets huge corporate funding for all these big corporations in the United States. La Raza, which wants to reconquer parts of America and turn it into Atslan, as they call it. They hate white people and tell us we should go back to Europe, but their name literally means the race, which is very funny because they're a mixed race group of people. But they think that they're some kind of cosmic race, some kind of chosen cosmic race of mestizos who is destined to reconquer the American continent. And so they need to understand that just because that they are brought up to not really consider race all that important doesn't mean that the other people of the planet, the black children, are definitely taught that race is very important. And the Mexican children, all the rest, they are very aware of race, but it's pretty much just white people who have been convinced that they need to be colorblind. Right. And so this really puts us at a big disadvantage, because we're dealing with people who are seeking our destruction, and we don't even care. You've got people like the professor, Noel Ignatieff. Mm-hmm. He was professor yeah. of American history at the Massachusetts College of Art. He was the co-editor and co-founder of Race Traitor magazine. He said, "The goal of abolishing the white race is on its face so desirable that some may find it hard to believe that it could incur any opposition other than from committed white supremacists. Keep bashing the dead white males and the live ones, and the females too, until the social construct known as the white race is destroyed."
Yeah.
Not deconstructed, but destroyed. But honestly, it gets even worse than that. We have people who are very influential who have been advocating for not just destroying the concept of the social construct of the white race, but literally killing masses of white people. I mentioned, you know, the NoFX song and Jamie Foxx. That's, you know, people can just write that off as, oh, it's kind of, you know, they're laughing about it. You know, they're not serious about doing so. Well, we've got this group that was operating in the United States, active during the Cultural Revolution of the 60s and onward, known as the Weather Underground. The Weather Underground was founded by two Jews, Bill Ayers and Bernadie Dorn. And they had a very radical ideology, which would go on to shape the opinions of many influential people, such as Barack Obama. Bill Ayers actually, in the 90s, helped to launch Barack Obama's political career. He held a big fundraiser for him. They were neighbors in Chicago. And Bill Ayers of the Weather Underground, who was rightfully labeled as a terrorist and arrested because he was bombing federal buildings, somehow got let off and then was able to teach at Columbia University. But let's get into what the Weather Underground was really all about. A former member named Doug McAdam told, and this is on video, people can look this up, he stated what their real agenda was about. And here's a quote from Doug McAdam, who was a former member. And this was at the last above ground meeting of the Weather Underground. Was it or was it not the duty of every good revolutionary to kill all newborn white babies? At that point, it seemed like a relevant framing of an issue. The logic being, hey, look, through no fault of their own, these white kids are going to grow up to be part of an oppressive racial establishment internationally. And so really, your duty is to kill newborn white babies.
My God.
And this, actually this guy has stated that he wrote Dreams from my father, Barack really? Obama's mm-hmm. memoirs. Yeah. Yes, and yeah. I've never heard Barack contend that this is false.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised, because throughout that book, it's complete anti-white quotes left and right. I've pulled some of them out, and it's just anti-white garbage left and right in Dreams for My Father. And he stated on a number of occasions that he actually wrote that book for him. And of course, politicians have this done for them all of the time. But this ideology is not just limited to the Weather Underground. It influenced a lot of other people. For example, you mentioned Columbia University there. Barack Obama did go to Columbia University. So did Eric Holder. And when Eric Holder was at Columbia University, he was actually part of an armed takeover of a vacant ROTC building. And they demanded that this ROTC building be renamed the Malcolm X Lounge. Well, what did Columbia University do? Kick out all these students who had an armed takeover of one of their buildings? No. They actually complied and say, okay, sure, you can have this as the Malcolm X Lounge. And Barry Satoru, also known as Barack Obama, he would then hang out there. So we have these radicals who want to see the destruction of the white race and are taking steps to achieve that. And this mass immigration is just one of these parts. Active violence could be another. Already we see in America, huge waves of black on white crime that's completely swept under the rug. This is not just isolated incidents. These are basically mob riots against white people in all over the country, where masses of black people get together and beat up or kill anybody who's white. We've got some incidents known as the knockout game. We've got also polar bear hunting, and it's really open season now. And for the most part, almost entirely, these are never labeled as hate crimes. Well, because you've got Eric Holder in charge of the Justice Department, mm-hmm. and he is a radical. He is a radical who hates white people. And one of the first acts he did was to pardon the Black Panthers, who were intimidating voters outside of a voting place in two places. And this was in both elections, 2008 and 2012, in Philadelphia and in Arizona. And he just completely excused armed Black Panthers, or they had nightsticks, from intimidating because they were intimidating voters. That's completely fine.
It's so funny how there's the double standards into it, because, I mean, usually these are the most law-abiding people in the world, right? They're always constantly about the laws and the rules and following regulations and doing everything to the T, right? But then in certain cases, specifically when it comes to, for example, to illegal immigrants, right? It's, nope, that's fine, no problem at all. If it's violence directed in a certain direction, no problem, no fine. I mean, Eric Holder has done more to destroy the justice system of America than few others, I think. Of course, in unison with all the other ones you mentioned, Barack Obama included. But I wanted to ask you something. How is it then that the ideology behind this, how is it that people who never were subjected to suppression and slavery is to get reparations by someone who never subjected those others to the suppression and slavery? How does the standard work in this idea that all of a sudden, as you said, it's collective punishment? But in some way, these people, even like these young babies now who aren't even adults yet, haven't even learned to walk yet, are somehow to blame for all the future problems of what is going to come in the world. Why does people not see through this, do you think? What's really at the root of this?
Well, they're playing upon people's emotions, and they're also dealing with people who don't have a good grasp of history or of the world. For example, the black youths, as they call them, who are involved in these criminal gangs and also in the violent attacks against white people, they are not they're not doing very well. They're brought up in terrible environments, and so they're looking for somebody to blame. Instead of ever looking to their own black leaders, instead of looking towards the Jews that have been leading them astray, such as in the ACLU, which was founded and led by Jews for most of its existence, they're going to blame white people because all of the popular media is telling them that is who is to blame and that's who owes them reparations. And I'm sure it's a traumatic experience and a very formative one to see movies like, of course, we mentioned Schindler's List, but 12 Years a Slave is a very relevant one recently, or Django Unchained. So this really serves to radicalize them against white people. And that's why you have groups like the New Black Panthers Party that are going out there and actually gaining some traction. I can't believe that they're able to say what they're saying. They're advocating for the genocide of white people, and there are no repercussions. There are a few quotes here, just real quickly. Mm-hmm. The Michelle Williams, chief of staff of the New Black Panthers Party, I'm not sure if she still is, but she said, "I just want to say to all the listeners on this phone call that if you are having any doubt about getting suited, booted, and armed up for this race war that we're in that has never ended, let me tell you something. The things that's about to happen to these honkies, these crackers, these pigs, these people, these motherfuckers, it has been long overdue." And as I said, the New Black Panther Party is completely excused by Eric Holder for intimidating voters.
Let me ask you this quickly again, because we have situations. I want to try to make a comparison here to what we see in other parts of the world as well. Mm-hmm. When we see, for example, organizations then from the American side and, they're funding Al-Qaeda, they're funding, the ISIS groups, revolutionary groups within countries, even in Ukraine, we're kind of a similar situation where they're trying to, detopple the leadership, they're trying to create chaos, they're trying to, do it in this way. I wanted to kind of transpose that ideology that other people can see in other parts of the world over to what's happening in not only America, but also Europe, but specifically we can focus on America right now. So we have Eric Holder, for example, being kind of part of that network of people who are like, pardoning certain people and looking the other way for this. Now, do you think that the ultimate agenda here is to create some kind of race war, that this is, they want to try to create so chaotic conditions within America to basically completely take it over and run it as a police state and with enforced security, militarized police and everything else? Because, that seems to be, to me anyway, what they're trying to achieve. This is what they're trying. They're ramping up this as much as they can, pushing it like the Zimmerman situation, money more than like those as well. But it's like they're doing everything they can to instigate this, correct?
Yes. Yes. And real quickly, Eric Holder also was the one responsible for the Fast and the Furious scandal, where he's shipping automatic weapons down to Mexico, which are then flooding back across the border with the illegal immigrants and killing U.S. border agents.
Yeah.
It's a complete travesty of justice. But let's talk about a DHS officer who was in charge of buying ammunition and weapons for the Department of Homeland Security, named Io Kamathi. This was he went by the name also the Irritated Genie. He had a website titled "The War on the Horizon," and he had a quote here, and he has many quotes, but one of them is, "Warfare is imminent, and in order for black people to survive the 21st century, we are going to have to kill a lot of whites, more than our Christian hearts can possibly count." Now, this person was suspended for about half a year and eventually let go from the DHS. I think he was getting paid the whole time he was suspended. But could you imagine if it had been a white person who had been saying that warfare is imminent, and in order for white people to survive the 21st century, we're going to have to kill a lot of black people, more than our Christian hearts can possibly count.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It would be a huge scandal. And this was just kind of a blip on the radar. But the fact of the matter is that there are a lot of people that think exactly like Io Kamathi. And this was a guy who was in charge of buying weapons and ammunition for the Department of Homeland Security. And if you've seen the targets that they had ordered maybe a year or so ago, they were all very, very telling. It was, you know, a white woman with her child holding a gun. These are the targets that DHS agents are going to be firing at. An old white a grandfather, you know, a white boy with a gun. No, none of them were, you know, really non-white or anything.
Because that's not that's not politically correct, right? So there you go.
Right. Yeah. So they're firing at white families. That's their target practice. So it's just, it's very, very frightening, to say the least. And really does. It goes into this whole concept of white genocide that people just don't seem to be willing to grasp. Oftentimes, they don't like to hear this word genocide ever associated with something that's being committed against white people. And maybe it's because they don't see a mass slaughter of white people, but that does not mean that genocide is not taking place. That's just one component of genocide. Yeah. Is the act of slaughter, and it is happening. It's just not being reported on, that aspect. But there are many other parts of genocide, forcibly integrating a people is also genocidal, and destroying their morale through mental harm. That's genocide. All of this white guilt and white privilege crap, this is all part of genocide against the white European people, and the effects of it can be seen. You can actually go and measure our decline, and it's happening, and it's going to keep happening until people really start to smarten up, realize that what's taking place, and understand that it's not wrong for them to think racially. It's not wrong for them to care about their own people. It is not wrong for them to protect their own people. This is probably the most moral and righteous thing that they could possibly do, especially under the current circumstances.
Right. Well, exactly. That's kind of how that's been turned around and used against people, I think, in terms of how they're trying to portray that it's an immoral cause or whatever, or that it's based in irrationality or complete hatred of everyone else or whatnot. But that's, I would say, that's not all the case. And it's also really important to realize that there is a huge difference, as we know, about something which is short-term and immediate and something you can see right away, as opposed to a slow, long-term plan, you know. And that's something that it's also increasingly difficult for people to see when they're not part of that kind of seeing the whole the transposition of the agenda of the plan, if you will. So how do you think that people can see that and realize, like, what actually is going on from the point of view of the globalists running the show? Those people are in charge, who are trying to enforce this ideology that you've been talking about and trying to diminish the role of, let's say, Europe and America and the world, and then trying to kind of heighten themselves or take control over these countries and institutions and running them in the direction that they want. Because there's another twist to the story as well, which I realize, which I have from the point of view of Europe, which is how I mean, what if they're trying to basically use and start a scenario where they're trying to gain more and more Europeans against, let's say, the Muslim population? And we might actually end up in a situation where Israel is going to be one of the countries that are going to benefit the most from having basically all of Europe standing up and rising up against the extremist Muslim and Islamism that we can see in Europe as well, and eventually turning on the Arab world. I mean, it's possible, as you said before, we might actually see the rise of a third world war because out of these conflicts, you know, there's been lesser things that, world wars have been started over, right? So it's a very dangerous situation to end up in that, right? Because, I mean, you're on the chessboard, we're part of the world. We can't set ourselves outside of that. Someone is now moving the pieces against us. How do you not respond to that? You have to respond to it. You're part of it. Otherwise, you'll be completely run over. But as you're responding to that, how do you prevent from not just ending up doing the bidding of someone else, in this case, let's say Israel, and actually ending up doing the bidding for them, so they can stand back and say, ha ha, great, you know, now they're taking the conflict and running it for us, and they're the ones having a nuke war with Iran and Iraq and all the other Arab countries, right?
Well, that's a great point you're bringing up here. And I think a good example that we can use for discussion is the English Defense League, the EDL. And this is a group that had taken a very anti-Muslim stance, but also a very pro-Israel stance. And this is one of the forms of controlled opposition that you're going to see arising these days when nationalistic fervor is coming to the forefront in the various European countries that are being overrun. We're seeing rising nationalism all over. You know, you have the success in the EU elections of UKIP and National Front and various other organizations.
Jobbik, Hungary. Yeah.
And you know, Golden Dawn in Greece has done very well in their own elections in Greece. And I think that they're really going to try to harness this energy and use it, just as you're saying, to further their own agendas rather than to see European people unite for their own common interests. And so they're going to probably try to fuel different ethnic conflicts between Europeans themselves. I think this is what we're seeing in the conflicts between Ukraine and Russia. And these have historical basis. And, you know, for white people in the United States, we don't think very ethnically anymore. We have become something of a melting pot of European people. And some of them are mixing with other people now. But we don't really know what it's like to be, you know, a European, where being nationalist means that you're also kind of against some of your neighbors so much.
Right.
So because, let's say, so-called white nationalists in America really do view Europeans and white people in general as their kinsmen. But nationalists in say Ukraine do not view the Russians as being part of their nationalism.
Yeah, you know what? I have to say that that situation is complete. I feel that they are very much manipulated by the forces within Ukraine right now, because as I'm looking back, and I talked to Lana about this too, and she has a Russian background. We even met some people that were Ukrainian. We talked with them a little bit about this, and they said, I mean, I know about the past in terms of what the Soviet Union caused in terms of the strifes, the Holodomor and all that, right? But openly, you can't just blame Russians for that. It was a complete different set of variables in place behind that. So hopefully they're historically smart to see that. But nonetheless, I think you have a situation where they're trying to manipulate the youth of Ukraine. I mean, the Ukrainian guy we talked with, he talked about how, for example, the media is completely controlled. They're working in every capacity they can to turn young Ukrainians against Russia. That's why you saw a lot of them walking around and he was beating up everyone who spoke Russian. So you have historically people that have been very close. I mean, it was like indistinguishable almost at one point. And now they're trying to create this tension between them. And I think it harkens back to something like what we saw with the Orange Revolution. You had a number of these oligarchs in these satellite countries to Russia. They're trying to do everything they can to destabilize these countries and ultimately put in their own puppet regimes and turn them against Russia, because that's one of their big enemies right now. I don't know if that's just my analysis of it, but what do you think about that, Kyle?
I think you're onto something there, and this is what we really have to avoid going forward is getting into unnecessary conflicts. And this is, you know, unnecessary conflicts between European nations and, well, you know, Russia is considered Eurasian, I guess, but we should avoid all of these conflicts between the different white countries, avoid anything that is like World War II, which was just so devastating. And yes, I have my sympathies in that conflict, but it was devastating for everyone. I despise those who that caused it. But I also think that we should avoid unnecessary conflicts between ourselves and the immigrants in our lands as well, because this can and should be resolved with as little bloodshed and violence as possible. That is the way I want to see things happen. I don't know if that will be how it happens, because people are stirring the pot just so much, and they're throwing sparks all around this powder keg, as we mentioned.
Well, exactly. But I mean,
we can't extricate ourselves from it, and come out alive on the other end, I do think.
Well, the reasoning here is to lessen violence. The reasoning here is, as we talk with Frank Salter and some of the other people as well, that we're trying to examine not only human nature, but, you know, biology and differences both in mindset and, you know, psychological archetypes that is associated with, you know, you know, different cultures and different races and different people and different groups and all of it, right? So this is something that has developed in different parts of the world. Has been the point here is that if you throw all this together and believe that it's going to create wonderful, peaceful conditions, I think you're beyond naive. I think you have an agenda at stage here in terms of trying to create as much conflict as possible. And so I see that that's one of the ultimate goals here is to basically create a scenario and a situation where you get perpetual, you know, security questions on the horizon of these governments. They basically have the incentive at that stage for, you know, endless surveillance, militarization of the police, trying to keep the peace. You'll see basically a gang war type scenario on the streets in every country around the world, you know, and who wants that, right? So the reasoning here is to try to avoid this situation from occurring and stopping it in its tracks now and saying, wait a minute, there is an agenda here. Someone wants to try to destabilize all the old countries as they were. They're trying to set up a global government. They're trying to create conditions for us to accept the global government to come into place. So it's about saying no to that as soon as possible in the picture. It's about saying before it's gone far enough and deep enough, we have to realize that it's being used against us and say we can actually try to work ourselves out of this situation by creating, you know, a peaceful peaceful countries instead, right? So it's just basically about returning, but to the same extent, it's also about stopping those who've taken over our, you know, running our foreign policy, running our militaries and our governments and doing all these things and creating all the wars and everything else that we've seen. So it's quite a task on our hands to try to turn this mega ship around. But I think it's possible. I think we don't have any other choice. This is a battle that we're facing now with, you know, with world government and complete chaos. You know, this is, I don't know. It's what do you make of it? Are you hopeful, Kyle?
I am hopeful. I've been seeing a lot of people starting to get it. I've been seeing a lot of people like yourself and like Lana in the alternative media starting to talk about these subjects. And yeah, there is something of a line being drawn where there are some who think that we're the most evil, wicked, racist ever. But then there are others who are coming to our side and saying, you know what, you have valid points.
Yeah.
And I think that the best way forward is to work within the legal systems as much as we can of our various nations, or rather countries, and to advocate for our interests in a professional and a well thought out manner. And that's what the White Man March was all about. And what we did with two different dates, we did one on March 15th and then also on April 19th. We just had people go out and do whatever they could to advocate for pro-white causes. And one of the main messages we had was diversity, in quotation marks, because they're not talking about real diversity, because white Europeans have real diversity. Just real quickly, we have real diversity. We have different eye colors, you know, blue, green, brown. We've got different hair colors, red, blonde, brown. We got different skin types, different physical builds. We've got all sorts of differences within the European people. We got enough diversity. We won't need any more. But their diversity, we put that in quotation marks, equals white genocide. And that really, in essence, is true, because their diversity means less white people in the workforce. It means less white people in communities. It means less white people in the country. It means less white people all around. And that's genocidal.
Where are all these white people supposed to go? That's always what I've asked.
Tell us to go back to Europe. In right. America, they say, oh, the mestizos of La Raza say, go back to Europe, invaders. I say, you know what? I would think about it if Europe was still white, but Europe is facing the same problems that we're facing here in America. So there's no place left to go. Diversity is really about chasing down the last proud white person and forcing him to accept the multiculturalism. But again, this diversity is not just white genocide. It's genocide in general.
Well, exactly. Yeah, that's my point as well. It might be directed in this particular area right now, but just you wait. It's going to turn on everybody eventually. And that's something I've said before as well, that it's like you might be joining in on the bandwagon because you feel good about that or whatever agenda you have. But the fact is, as we know, every oppositional force is going to stand in the way of those who seek to dominate and control world policy and the entire resources of the globe. They'll turn on anybody that stands in their way eventually. And as we know, there's going to be people who are going to be smart to this and stand up for their own causes and for their group and for their race. And they'll be targeted just in the way as everyone else is going to be, you know?
Well, I'm just like you in that I advocate for real multiculturalism and real diversity, which means that people need to have their own spaces to continue their race, to continue their ethnicity, to continue their culture. And what happens when you mix together all of these different cultures or ethnicities or races in a melting pot? They you lose. You don't have real diversity. You lose the multiculturalism.
Yeah. Yeah.
You let's take an example of you take 10 different breeds of dogs and you put them all together in the same kennel. You come back 50 years later, you're going to have none of those breeds anymore. They're all going to be mixed up. They're all going to be mongrels. That's what their agenda is all about. It's not about real diversity, about real multiculturalism, about really respecting other people's cultures. Yeah. It's about exporting and importing this monoculture, this consumerist, materialistic, disgusting and depraved vision of the world into all these different lands, and to making it so that there are none of these beautiful differences between the various peoples of Europe and the various peoples of the world.
Mm-hmm,
and I think that's an utter travesty.
I think so too, yeah. I mean, and that's exactly what Kudinov Kalergi, the count that was partial with one of the Habsburgs of setting up the pan-European movement back in 1920s. And his own works state that this was one of the agendas and goals with the creation of a European or a pan-European movement, he called it then, but today they call it the European Union, of course, which is like, that's genocide of trying to ethnically, terminate the various races within Europe and to create one race, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, what did the Jewish former general of NATO, Wesley Clark, have to say about this? There is no place in modern Europe for ethnically pure states. That's a 19th century idea, and we are trying to transition into the 21st century, and we are going to do it with multi-ethnic states.
Hmm.
That's the plan right there, yeah. From a former general of NATO.
Yeah.
And the same thing you can see was happening in America too, where you had Bill Clinton in his 1997 State of the Union saying, we have grown into an experiment in democratic diversity fueled by openness and promise. My fellow Americans, we must never, ever believe that our diversity is a weakness. It is our greatest strength.
Now, let's just examine that a little bit. What do you think is at the root of that, Kyle, when it comes to eradicating cultural, roots and heritages and everything that makes us different, basically, in that regard? And that difference is not—that's not bad. It's all good. We have different properties. We are talented at different things. That's something that actually has led to people being able to work together and accomplish great things, you know. But the fact is, I see it in a way as a kind of a creation of a type of human being which is much more easily controllable. And that's ultimately where I see that this boils down to. I mean, again, for everyone who examines, the banking conspiracies and the New World Order and the globalists and the elite and everything that you've been seeing in the last few years. What we're talking about right now is basically just, it's another flavor exactly of what they're doing. I mean, I think it's one of the primary ones, of course, but nonetheless, it's exactly what they're trying to achieve to be able to reach their objective, which is to create a type of human being which is so far gone in terms of their cultural roots that they will adopt any lifestyle that basically is given to them, whether that's pop culture or what fashion to use or whatever. There's no basis in any kind of heritage and culture, so therefore it serves them very well. I mean, there's even been BBC articles talking about this, of a new kind of race almost splitting off, that you have two different ones, and one is going to be this kind of servant class, and that's what they're trying to turn everyone else into. It'll be them, the elite, and then everyone else a monoglob. What do you think about that, Kyle?
I think that is where they're heading. And I think Charlie Manson with Helter Skelter was talking about pretty much the same thing, it seems. Kind of an aside there. But what happens to a tree when you sever its roots? It dies. Yeah, it might look good for you if you bring in that Christmas tree for a little while. You got to keep a little water in it. But once you sever a tree from its roots, it's done. Yeah. You could take it and bring it anywhere. But if a tree still has its roots, it's very strong.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about family trees here. We're talking about the world tree, even. You know, we're talking about even pagan Europe as well. I honestly think that now this is taking into a direction. You know, we've already spent so much time talking. This could be a whole other show. But we're talking about severing people from their connections to the past, to their forefathers, to their ancestors, and doing so in order to control them.
Yeah.
And I do think that originally this is what the Christian church was doing to Europeans. They were cutting down the Irminsul, which is pretty much a representation of the world tree. This goes back to Charlemagne. They were basically severing people from their pagan roots, although the pagan roots did remain in some of the Christian celebrations. For example, why did people even have those Christmas trees inside their homes? Well, the reason that they did that was because they weren't allowed to have the Christmas trees outside of their homes, still living as they used to when they were pagans. They had to bring them in to hide those Christmas trees from the church, because Christmas trees were outlawed, or rather, winter solstice trees.
Yeah.
And so this is a step in severing people from their roots. And it's very hard to do that. And that's why a lot of the different remnants of our pagan past still remain. You know, the Easter bunny, that's not Christian. The Christmas tree, all these other all the different symbolism surrounding the Christian religion. But what happened after the European people were severed from their past, from their pagan roots? Then we saw all of these incursions into Europe. Before that, Europe was pretty much primarily European and was very, very powerful, impregnable almost. And after the European people were forcibly converted to Christianity and were basically forced to take a universalistic mindset, wherein in Christ there is no, but I can't quote it directly, there's no Greek and no Jew, no Gentile. There is no man or woman. We're all one in Christ. This is the kind of mindset that has really helped to weaken our resistance to foreign invaders.
If what did it say is, if everyone is my brother, no one is my brother. You know, it's like it's kind of what Atti talked about in terms of discrimination again. It's like discrimination is a natural thing. You discriminate in terms of what shoes you want to wear in the morning. You don't walk out with all your shoes on you or all your shirts. You know, you make a choice. You can't embrace the entire world. You can be nice to everybody. You can have a relationship on and off with everybody. You don't have to war with everybody. But ultimately, you make choices as human beings. And this ideology of just open embrace and everyone at the same time kind of thing, it doesn't work, you know. We've been played in terms of our morals, we've been played on our naivety, and it's time for us to, I think, realize and get familiar again with human nature. And I think that will make us not only better human beings, it will make us prouder and smarter, and even it will make us more friendly and more likable, even, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, definitely. You mentioned being prouder. Every other race on the planet is able to be proud of themselves, proud of their accomplishments. And it's just white people who, once they say anything that indicates that they have pride in their people, pride in their ancestors, then they are the most vile, the most evil people you could ever imagine. You have to completely ostracize them. Oh, no. White pride? Pride in being white? No. You can have gay pride. You can have brown pride, Mexican pride. You can have black pride. You can have Asian pride. You can have whatever kind of pride you want, as long as it's not white pride. Yeah. And this is just part of the demoralization campaign. And people are getting sick of it. They have pushed this to the point where it's just so obnoxious, in your face, that people, I do see that there's an awakening taking place. Where it's just become too aggressive, that people are just rejecting it en masse. And I do think that there are many good signs that this agenda is pretty much on its last legs. I at least surely hope so. I'm going to do everything I can do to ensure that we have a future that is radically different than our recent past, because the recent past has just been so destructive, so demoralizing, so so loathsome in so many different ways. And I want to see not just my people, but all people return to a state of mental and physical and psychological health.
Yeah.
And we just can't do this when we have so many different mind viruses always attacking us through the media.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Kyle. Maybe we can spend some more time talking about entertainment and media in general, maybe another time here. But I think it's time to wrap things up here. We've gone a little bit over in the second as well, but a lot to talk about and very interesting. So first of all, I want to thank you, of course, for coming back. Nice to have you on the program again. So thanks for spending some time with us and sharing, of course, some of your recent work you've been doing, your perspective with us on these, well, controversial, but also extremely important topics that we actually must begin to talk about if we are to go anywhere near some kind of realization of what the globalists and the New World Order is actually trying to do to all of mankind in that regard. So great having you back again, Kyle. Please give us your details on some of your websites again so people know where to find you if they want to listen to more of your stuff.
Sure. It's renegadebroadcasting.com. And I just want to thank you so much, Heinrich, for having this conversation. I've really enjoyed it. And I think that you're really doing something that's very courageous with Red Ice Creations. And I really enjoy listening to your various programs and all the different points of view that you're bringing to light. So best of luck to you moving forward. And I am really excited about what the future holds for us when we have so many intelligent and dedicated people working towards some common goals.
Great stuff. Thanks, Kyle. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. Thank you for considering. I hope you have some new material to look into and consider further. We'll be back with Dan Rayner on Red Ice Radio. Then we have Radio 314 on Wednesday again with Michael Griffith on a Southern view of the American Civil War. When do you ever hear about that, by the way? All right, I hope you have a great weekend. Please take care of yourself and your loved ones. We'll be back here then in just a few days with more as we continue our independent investigations and discuss the madness of our times. Thank you for being a member. My thanks to Frederick, Lana, Elizabeth, and John. We'll speak to you again soon. Bye-bye.